It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferris.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up on Central Time, we'll recap the top news out of Washington this week with Paul Singer of USA Today.
First, a look at a new report on the costs and benefits of self-insurance for Wisconsin state employees. That's an idea that Governor Scott Walker's administration has been studying in recent years. Self-insurance could be passed by the state legislature and put into effect as early as 2018.
David Wahlberg joins us now to talk about this latest report. He's the health and medical reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal. David, welcome back to Central Time.
Hello, good to be here.
Well, I want to start by defining what we're talking about in Wisconsin. This is the term self-insurance. What is self-insurance?
Yeah, so basically there's two ways employers can insure their workers. One is called fully insured, and that's when employers hire insurance companies to run the program, and then premiums go to the companies, and they pay out the claims for medical care, and they also accept the risk if there's really large claims, like a transplant, for example. Where self-insurance, the employer does it themselves, and they just keep all the money and the premiums that employees pay, and then they just pay out the claims themselves, usually by hiring a company to administer it.
And the takeaway from the report, it doesn't seem like it's a slam dunk for either option. A quote from your article here, consultants have said self-insurance could save $42 million a year or cost $100 million more a year. Why is it so ambiguous?
Right, and those are previous reports that consultants have made. Well, part of it is what would be the potential savings. For one of the savings that have been cited is an Affordable Care Act fee. And as we know, there's a lot of uncertainty about what will happen with the Affordable Care Act. So that one is a little bit of a question mark. Also, administrative costs. Some people think they might go up. Some people think they might go down. And then another issue is just the whole complicated process of how insurance works and how they bid and how they set their rates. And some argue that the way we do things now in Wisconsin is very competitive and keeps rates down that way, but others say that it could be lowered by doing self-insurance.
When you look at the risk that is assumed and has the potential, I guess, either to save money or cost money, what do you see?
Well, it's hard to know. One thing the report mentioned is that the disease burden of people who are state employees and their family members is slightly higher than normal or than average. So that could mean that there's more chance that people will have really high expenses in a particular year, like a transplant or an open heart surgery or something like that. So that just means that the state might need to make sure it has plenty of cash reserves to pay out those claims. But the report actually mentions that the state seems to think that they have adequate reserves for that.
Where does the state see the most potential for saving money and for having more increased flexibilities?
Well, you know, in a broader scale, there's sort of three groups of people to think about when thinking about self-insurance. So one is the state itself, and they see this as a way to potentially reduce costs, but also to get more control over their health benefits programs, in part through owning the data about employees. Right now, the health insurance companies kind of control that data, and so the state feels like they don't really know if they're getting a good deal or not without being able to see more of that data. The other group is the workers themselves. Potentially benefits might change. They might potentially have to pay more for the benefits. But it's important to point out that those two things could also happen under the current system with fully insured benefits. So that isn't really necessarily tied to self-insurance. And then the other big impact, and probably the one that's leading to so much interest in this statewide, is the effect on healthcare markets or healthcare systems. Wisconsin has an unusually competitive health insurance market, and that's tied to our regional healthcare systems around the state. And most of the health plans that insure the state workers are owned by those health systems. So if insurance changes for state workers, that could have a big trickle-down effect to regional health systems around the whole state.
And you mentioned the cost that could go up, but that could happen under the current system of health insurance. But beyond that, logistically speaking, what would self-insurance change for state employees?
So it's basically a funding mechanism, but it does give the state, meaning the Department of Employee Trust Funds, more ability to directly change benefits than they do now, because now they sort of have to talk to all of the 18 health plans that are involved and get them to sort of sign on to the changes that they're looking at. So, for example, last year, the Group Insurance Board, which oversees this, approved some changes requiring employees to pay more for more cost sharing for some of the benefits, higher fees for some prescription drugs, for example. And so the board was, the state was able to propose and the board was able to approve those under the current system, but it's just more difficult to do that than it would be under the new system, under self-insurance. The state could just sort of do that more automatically.
Now, the Wisconsin Association of Health Plans opposes this idea of moving to self-insurance. What did they say about why that is?
Well, it's mostly because of what I touched on before, that impact on the regional health systems and the insurers around the state. So there are 17 health plans that are in the current fully insured part of the state worker program, and that association represents many of those health plans, notably, especially the ones in Dane County, where this is the biggest issue. So the state workers make up about 15% of the health insurance market around the state, so carving them out of that market could really have a big impact on insurance companies and the health systems that they are owned by. So maybe people wouldn't go to those systems as much. Maybe they would go elsewhere. So as an example, in Madison, Unity, and which is tied to UW Health, and Dean Health Plan, which is tied to SSM, are two of the major players with the state workers. So if under self-insurance, maybe it would be administered by a United Healthcare or a company like that. Perhaps the way that company might set up doctor networks, maybe people would not be as inclined to go to UW or to St. Mary's Hospital in Madison for certain things. Maybe there would be a chance for them to go to different doctors. And so the insurance companies and the health systems are concerned about what all that might mean.
We're talking with David Wahlberg, health and medical reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal. He joined us today to talk about a new report on self-insurance for Wisconsin state employees. And David, you mentioned this earlier, but the future of healthcare in the United States is kind of in limbo right now, with President-elect Donald Trump vowing to overhaul the Affordable Care Act. So how does that uncertainty play into the decision that Wisconsin looks to be making about self-insurance?
Well, the Affordable Care Act fees that the state pays right now were one of the motivating factors for looking at self-insurance. But there certainly are other reasons, like we've already talked about, and so the state, would say that they still have those reasons, trying to have more control over the benefits and maybe reducing cost. And it's also important to note that the state is looking at doing more wellness programs and disease management programs for their employees. And they seem to be looking at pursuing that regardless of what they decide about self-insurance and, frankly, regardless of what happens at the federal level with Affordable Care Act. So, it could have something to do with what they ultimately decide here, but really the two things are kind of separate.
And just briefly, David, as we wrap up, the board was presented this morning, the report was presented this morning to the Group Insurance Board. How did that go?
Yeah, well, they asked some interesting questions. They talked about a couple aspects of it. One was the savings that they currently have from the program through competitive bidding, and some people questioned whether that really is savings or just kind of a cost avoidance. And then they also talked about why Wisconsin pays more for their workers than other states do, and they said it might be because the benefits are richer, it might be because the disease burden is higher, and it might be because they're getting worse rates from insurers. So those were some of the things they talked about. And now this afternoon, they're talking in closed session about the specific proposals for self-insurance. And then the plan is to vote on whether to pursue this December 13th.
David, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, well, good to be here.
That was David Wahlberg, health and medical reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal. He joined us today to talk about a new report on self-insurance for Wisconsin State employees.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Vera.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up this weekend, Hmong American communities around Wisconsin will celebrate the new year. We'll learn more from a member of the Hmong Milwaukee Consortium.
First, it's time for our weekly check-in on national politics. As usual, we've got plenty of President-elect Donald Trump news to discuss, including his latest picks for cabinet appointments and his announcement this morning on Twitter that he'll be removing himself from the business operations of his company.
And on the other side of the aisle, Democrats opted to re-elect one of their top party leaders, but not everyone is happy with that decision.
Paul Singer joins us. He's a Washington correspondent at USA Today. Paul, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Rob. How are you?
I'm good. Well, on Twitter this morning, Donald Trump laid out some basics on how he would separate himself from his company's interests to focus on the presidency. What did he and what didn't he say in this mini-tweet epic here?
Well, I wish he wouldn't do these things at 6:30 in the morning, because we were all awake at our computers writing these stories at that hour.
So what, do you have like an alert, like when Donald Trump tweets, it like goes off on your phone and wakes you up?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
And it's going to be really hard for this entire administration. But the interesting thing about this tweet storm is it indicates the kind of problems the journalism community faces. Donald Trump puts out a series of tweets saying, I'm not required by law, but I'm going to distance myself from my companies. I'm going to completely extract myself from the companies, and I'm going to make an announcement on December 15th that makes it clear that it's more important for me to run the country than run the companies. But it never really explained how he plans to do this or what he means by completely remove myself from the companies, or does he just hand it off to his kids, which probably is not enough to satisfy most ethics lawyers. It's a real tough issue for someone like me, because you want to write a story saying Donald Trump says he will basically divest himself from the Trump companies, but he hasn't actually said that, and we have to point that out as well, that it's not really clear what he means.
Well, on the legal side of things, he has pointed out, others have pointed out, that some of the federal conflict of interest laws don't apply specifically to the president of the United States.
Right. That is true, that they do not specifically apply to the president of the United States. But there is this interesting question you could ask, which is basically, so you mean to tell me that the Secretary of Commerce, we take seriously that person's commercial ventures and should be removed from them, but the Secretary of Commerce's boss we don't care about? It's just kind of an odd thing to imagine. Besides which, even if he's not legally liable, the issue becomes, it just casts the shadow for the entirety of his presidency. Every time one of his businesses pops up in any news story, we would have to go into this whole series of conversations about whether or not Donald Trump knew that the Trump property X was benefiting from this decision.
And what we've seen from presidents in the last bunch of years is they take their holdings, put them in a blind trust managed not by a family member, but by somebody else, and the president, in theory, doesn't know what's in that trust.
Yeah, that's also a problem for Donald Trump. And just for you, I mean, the unique reasons of the Trump enterprise, they all have the Trump name on it.
Right.
So it's like, how would Donald Trump not know that the government agency X had just decided to host a convention at the Trump Hotel three blocks from the White House, right? I mean, it's just like, there's no way he can be blind, literally, to all of that activity. But the idea is, at least, that the decision-making of the company would be separated from the decision-making of the government, and clearly so.
So as a journalist covering the new administration, are you going to be looking for that? You know, President Trump makes a decision related to country X. There's a business deal in the offing in country X that involves putting the Trump name on a building or something. How do you Yes. start to try to sort out possible relationships between those two facts?
Well, and by the way, there's an additional problem here, is that since we haven't seen Donald Trump's tax returns, it's very difficult to know with certainty exactly what all these business relationships are. We are inferring some of them. We are finding some of them in other documents. So, you know, as long as Donald Trump is related to the Trump Organization in a meaningful way, every single business interaction between the Trump Organization and any other foreign government or foreign industry will be newsworthy, because essentially the President of the United States is striking a deal with, pick your country coal company. That is going to be news.
Oh, and those countries include the United States. There's some question about a Trump property in Washington and space being rented by the government of the United States.
Right. Well, the hotel itself, the Trump Hotel, which, you know, Donald Trump was talking up a lot during the campaign about how he was very excited to be building this hotel, ahead of time and under budget. It wasn't actually ahead of time, but aside the point. That's actually a federal building owned by the federal government. There is a line in the contract that says no elected official will benefit from this may benefit from this contract, and the contract was given to a private company to redevelop the building and turn it into a hotel. And the company that won that bid was the Trump Organization. Well, now Mr. Trump, as the head of the Trump Organization, is an elected official. How do you reconcile that? He's his own landlord.
A lot to talk about on that issue. We're talking to Paul Singer from USA Today about some of the big stories from national politics. Let's move on, Paul, to a vote in Congress today. The House Minority Party, the Democrats, have elected a new leader, the same as the old leader, Nancy Pelosi, again.
Exactly. Nancy Pelosi has been the Democratic leader since, I think, 2003, in good times and bad.
And this is a bad time for them.
Well, for Democrats, this is a terrible time. They've been taking a beating in elections three times in a row. They are basically, their lowest level of representation in Congress, in the House, in years. And there were younger members of Congress, not necessarily more liberal members of Congress, but that was some of that. But there were younger members of Congress who feel like it is time for a new leadership that can appeal to a new generation. And she faced an actual challenge to be renamed leader of the Democrats in the House. She took two-thirds of the vote, but Tim Ryan of Ohio took one-third of the vote, which is not insignificant.
Could have been confusing with two Ryans there, I guess.
I know. I couldn't wait for the typos.
So is there an argument here that, states like California, where Pelosi is from, slam dunk for Democrats, not a big worry there. States like Ohio, where this other Ryan is from, will we lose that sometimes? Is there a thought like, hey, maybe if we up our profile in those states, that could benefit the Democratic Party from those insurgents there?
Maybe, but I honestly believe it's more generational than it is geographic. The issue for the Democrats is you are looking at a leadership that, by and large, is over the age of 70. There's Nancy Pelosi, there's Steny Hoyer from Maryland, there's this whole series of leaders who have been around a long, long time, and you start to ask the question, they're not producing great results in reelecting Democrats or electing new Democrats. Is there something we should be doing to try and change this, to appeal to a younger generation? Should we get more ethnic minorities? Should we have more Latinos, more blacks on the senior leadership team? Any of those things to try and break through a little bit of the culture. I think that was really what was motivating this. And ultimately, the caucus appears to have settled on the notion that, and most of the caucus agreed, that what they really need is Nancy Pelosi's extraordinary strategic skills in Congress, because she's good at that stuff. She knows the Congress really well. we'll see if it makes a difference.
And Paul, let's check in on the latest cabinet appointments. We're seeing one or two every day or two now from the Trump team. Let's look at Treasury. Now, Donald Trump ran against the idea that there were, you know, two cozy relationships between Washington insiders and Wall Street. His followers criticized Ted Cruz. His wife had an affiliation with Goldman Sachs. Hillary Clinton was criticized for talking to Wall Street companies. Talk about Seth Mnuchin. Am I saying that right? The new Treasury appointee.
Yeah, who's from Goldman Sachs. So, like, this is the irony of this whole thing, is that, you know, Mnuchin grew up in the Goldman Sachs brokerage. He became an expert in some of the financial deals that got them in trouble in the first place. He started his own hedge fund, despite the fact that Donald Trump has said that hedge fund managers should pay more taxes and were getting away with murder. Mnuchin started his own hedge fund and then went to Hollywood and started financing movies, which is kind of interesting. Has never worked in government. The thing that's interesting, I think, and to focus on really, aside from the odd background, is that Mnuchin was speaking on, I think it was CNBC Today, and he said basically, this is what Trump's major message is that we're going to make major tax cuts the first thing we do, tax cuts for corporations, tax cuts for individuals, and the way we're going to pay for that, as it were, to make sure there's not a giant hole in the deficit, is through the growth in the economy that those tax cuts will spur. This is kind of the classic supply-side economics. We make it easier for people to make money. That generates more tax revenue to cover the costs of our reduced taxes. It didn't work when they tried this in 1981 with Reagan, but that's the theory, and that's what they are. This kind of a pick of Steve Mnuchin indicates that Trump is very serious about going forward with that.
And we'll leave it there for now. Paul, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks, Rob. Be well.
That was Paul Singer. He's a Washington correspondent at USA Today, bringing us up to date on some of the latest news in national politics.
Coming up after the news, we'll learn about the Hmong New Year celebration happening this weekend in Milwaukee. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, we talk about why some common life-saving prescriptions are becoming increasingly unaffordable.
First, this weekend is the Hmong New Year. This year, the Milwaukee Hmong American community will be celebrating its 41st New Year in the United States. Four decades ago, in December, the first 1,000 Hmong refugees resettled in cities across the United States, including in the Milwaukee area.
Diana Vang Brostoff joins us now to talk about the Hmong New Year. She's the public relations coordinator for the Milwaukee Hmong Consortium. Diana, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much, Rob and Veronica, for having me today.
Well, Diana, can you tell us a little bit about the cultural celebration of the Hmong New Year? What is it like?
Yeah, I'd love to. So this year, on December 34th, we are going to be having a celebration at the West Allis Shakespeare Expo Center. And basically, it's an event that takes over, it takes between November and December, just a little bit over a month. We're celebrating the end of the harvest season. You know, traditionally, Hmong people are farmers back in our homeland in Laos and Thailand. And so we take this time to just celebrate all of the successes we've had, all of the great harvests that we've had, and we've come together to eat and celebrate new beginnings for 2017.
And among Hmong holidays, is the New Year really the big one in Hmong culture?
It is, yeah. It's one of our main holidays. It's actually probably the only holiday that we actually celebrate right now, to be completely honest.
And you said this unfolds over a long period of time, about a month. What is it like having a holiday that lasts that long? Is there something different every day?
Well, it's really because different communities take turns celebrating the New Year. And so we have a New Year celebration here. There's also one that happens, like, in Madison. There's one that happens in St. Paul, Minnesota. They're happening in California. They're happening all over. And so really it's a season that we're celebrating of the New Year and not necessarily a date like we do here in America.
Now, I imagine being a holiday, there's got to be some food involved. Can you talk about some of the food that goes into Hmong New Year?
Yes, my favorite part of the New Year. One of my favorite desserts there is called Nampa. It's a tri-colored tapioca dessert. It's a drink. It has coconut milk in it. It's just delicious. I love it. And then, of course, it's also a place where you can get your famous purple sticky rice and eat your roasted orange chicken. It's delicious.
Ah, that does sound really delicious. And I've been reading about a particular ball-tossing game, something called Pav Pav.
That was close. It's called Bapa.
I thought I'd give it a try.
Yeah, no, that was great. Yeah, it's Hmong is a tonal language. It can be a little complicated, but it's called Bapa. It's a ball tossing game, a tennis ball that's covered in cloth, and it's a courting game. And so, you know, there's a couple things about it. Throw a ball and catch a husband. Mm-hmm. Or if you see a girl, toss the ball to her and hope she returns it. It's a game that young people do to try and court one another.
And speaking of courting, I understand that at least traditionally this was a time, the Hmong New Year celebration, this was kind of the meetup time for young single people. Is that right?
It is. Yeah, it definitely is. There are a lot of young people that show up, and also just other young families with their small children. So when you run in there, you'll see a lot of kids just running around having fun.
And we talked about, you know, the food associated with Hmong New Year. What about the music? What's going on musically?
Yeah, well, again, you know, once you walk into the Expo Center, you will hear a lot of traditional and contemporary Hmong music playing in all corners of the building because there's vendors there who are selling music from local artists. So we have that goes on in the vendors section. And then we also have an evening party that takes place on Saturday where we'll also have traditional and contemporary artists come play live for the audience that shows up.
We were talking about the Hmong New Year with Diana Vang Brostoff. It is Hmong New Year is going on now, a celebration this weekend in Milwaukee that she's part of. Diana, you mentioned that different communities have their celebration over the course of the month. Do you and others kind of make the circuit from one city one weekend to another city another and try to capture as much of the celebration as you can?
You know what? It's a busy time for my family. So personally, I haven't done it, but there's this, a group called the 18 Clan Council that works with the Hmong community as a whole. Each state has their own council. And so members of that council, they tend to be the ones that makes the whole circuit and gets to know all the communities because it's important for the work that they do.
And are there differences? You mentioned that this is something that's celebrated in different areas around the entire country. Are there differences in the way that people celebrate the Hmong New Year?
You know, that's a really good question. I don't think that there is. It's just they're just providing different opportunities for people to come together. If, for example, somebody in, you know, Eau Claire is not able to come to Milwaukee, then they have their own celebrations there that they have committed to organize their own Hmong New Year events.
And for people who aren't Hmong, what kind of things would you want them to know about Hmong culture as represented by the Hmong New Year?
We have a lot of great music, a lot of great food. We're very colorful people. Come see our traditional costumes and get to know us. We love America, and we'd love to share our culture with everybody here.
So if people do want to come and check out part of the celebration, what do we need to know, and where should we go?
Sure. So this is taking place on Saturday. This Saturday and Sunday, the 3rd and 4th. I believe the doors open at 9 and they close at 6, so it's open all day. And the parking cost is $5, and the entrance fee will be $3. We try to make it a low cost so that everybody in the community has a chance to come.
And as we mentioned at the outset, it was about 40 years ago this month that the first Hmong refugees at that time came over, obviously coming out from a very difficult situation in Southeast Asia. Among people, when you talk to people who are around then, what do they make? Is this a big deal, this 40-year anniversary?
Yeah, I think that Hmong people are very proud that they've been able to face a lot of adversity, and that they're able to continue celebrating the strength of our communities, continue to be able to do that here in America.
Diana, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Diana Vang Brostoff, Public Relations Coordinator for the Milwaukee Hmong Consortium. She joined us there to talk about the Hmong New Year celebrations in Milwaukee that are going on this upcoming weekend.
Coming up, it is starting to turn into binge TV watching season. Colder, longer nights, maybe some holiday time coming up. We are going to ask you to share your favorite shows to binge watch, or the ones you are looking forward to, the ones on your list to get the DVD or to stream. If you're into some of the new ones like The Crown or Westworld, or you go back to old favorites like Breaking Bad, Gilmore Girls, old and new, X-Files, call in now with your binge-watching recommendations. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can share your thoughts on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll be back in just a bit. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Farad. With the weather getting chillier, I think we have the first snow in the forecast for a lot of southern Wisconsin this week. Days getting shorter. It's a good time to do some binge TV watching.
And we want to hear from you on this. When you're in the mood to binge watch a series, maybe you just don't want to go outside because it's dark and it's cold and it's much cozier to be curled up with your TV or your iPad. Is there a newish series that you've really gotten into? Do you like to go back to old favorites? And what are you looking forward to watching in this perfectly acceptable season of binge watching?
Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Tell us what you've been watching or want to be watching right now. Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Let's take a caller. We've got Tina on the line in Lake Geneva. Tina, hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. How about you?
Good. Over Thanksgiving holiday, like the day it came out, I binge watched Gilmore Girls, which I highly recommend. I won't say anything, but it's definitely worth it if you're a fan.
Uh-huh, definitely.
But my other one that I've actually been talking with friends on Facebook and an online community is Westworld.
Westworld.
I'm going to have to watch on HBO. If you haven't watched it, you must watch it, but I still have to watch it again because I still don't know what's happening.
I was just going to say, I've been following people who tweet about Westworld.
Right.
I haven't been watching it, and what people seem to agree on is that they don't know what's happening.
Interesting.
So there's Westworld for you. But I'm halfway through Gilmore Girls, which I love the original Gilmore Girls. I'm having like a slight temporal dissonance because they're older and everything is a little bit different, but I still love it. It's the Gilmore Girls. And just because we should give you a little taste.
Everything in my life has something to do with coffee. I believe in a former life I was coffee. I
cannot believe the conversations I have in this room.
Loving you. I'm feeling very lost these days. I have no job. I have no credit. I have no underwear.
What?
Could have been a contender.
You're still a contender.
Clip there from the new Gilmore Girls, A Year in the Life. Rob, have you watched that one?
I never watched the old or new Gilmore Girls. Should I go back and watch it? Would it hold up watching the original?
You should, because you remind me of Kirk. Whenever I see Kirk, I think, hey, no, not really.
Question, is this good or bad? Because I haven't watched
really.
It,
it's
so I don't know.
It's a good show, though. You should watch it.
All right. Gilmore Girls, a lot of people binge-watching that. Let's check in now with Ellen in Oconto. Ellen, hi.
Hi.
What's your binge-watch, Ellen?
My binge-watch, 6 seasons of Call the Midwife. It's the BBC. I find it on Netflix, and it's 1945, east side of London, all the poor people and their struggles. Really good.
And I think our friends on public TV, they air Call the Midwife. And I know people who are hardcore devoted to that
show.
Yeah,
my mom loves it. She has done a lot of binge watching of that one. I haven't gotten to that one yet. I need to watch it.
I'm off my binge watching game. Ellen, thank you so much for sharing that one. I used to be one of the best, frankly. I was shameless and guilt-free. And now I don't know. Maybe our listeners are going to give me something that's really going to get me back
on
the couch.
It's so funny. We used to feel bad about watching too much TV. And now we feel bad because we're not watching
enough.
Enough
up.
TV.
We're not keeping up.
Thanks a lot, Ellen. And we're going to go next to Bob in Oshkosh. Bob, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to vote for?
Well, I am in my final semester of school, and I have been out, like Rob, I've been out of the binge watching game here for a little bit. So I'm really looking forward to my girlfriend is way ahead of me on Game of Thrones. I am just about to finish season one. So. In like 2 weeks, I'm going to be graduated, and I will be able to hopefully catch up.
Nice. So that's something to look forward to. How do you like it so far, the first season?
It's awesome, and I really like medieval things.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Rob and I have read the books, but I haven't made it all the way through the series.
I haven't made it all the way through either. I got to ask, your girlfriend is ahead of you on the series. You said, how is it with spoilers? Are you able to talk about the show? Is it dangerous?
Well, she's been a while removed from season one, so she's still kind of like, she's rewatching it now with me. So,
okay. Well, that's good fun.
And I ask questions, but she won't answer them. So.
Bob, thanks a lot for that call. Vote for Game of Thrones. We're asking for your binge-watching recommendations. What's on your binge-watching schedule? Emma at Wisconsin Public Television loves the more recent version of Battlestar Galactica. Its binge-worthiness was the basis for a skit on another show, Portlandia. Here's a listen.
It's her birthday. She's my friend, okay? So just.
What is she, 9?
You know what? That's not funny. You're just being a baby.
Why don't we watch this Battlestar Galactica DVD I just got? Season 1. I heard really good things about it.
Okay, I mean, the woman that I volunteer with at the Humane Society is always like, this is such a great show.
Let's watch this.
Okay, listen. One episode, and then we go to dessert.
Okay, we'll definitely make it. Gotta be 40 minutes tops. This will be good. I heard really good things about it. It's not just regular science fiction. It's actually good.
I love you.
Okay, episode 1.
And then they go on to watch that one episode and more and more, and they have their power turned off because they got so sucked in to watching the show, binge watching hardcore.
I can relate. Well, let's go to another caller now at 800-642-1234. It's getting dark, it's getting cold, and that means we have every reason in the world to binge watch our favorite shows. And we want to know what you're binge watching right now. Let us know, 800-642-1234. And Linda is next in Middleton. Linda, hi.
Recently, I just watched Modern Family.
Yeah, I've heard good things about that. What do you like about it?
I have 3 boys, and it just reminds me of the chaos.
The chaos, yeah. And do the boys watch it too, or is it a little too advanced?
Well, my older kids can. My 12-year-old doesn't always understand it, but he's willing to sit on the couch and snuggle, watch it a little bit together. So.
Nice. That's a good one. Well, thanks for bringing that one up.
Thanks for that call. Linda, we'll go next to Laura on the line in Ashland. Laura, hi.
Hi. I wanted to mention I'm into murder mysteries, so on Netflix, The Killing and The Fall are just excellent shows.
The Killing, that one looked a little gruesome to me, is it?
You know, it is a little gruesome, but the story is just so captivating, and you want to find out who did this, you know?
A classic whodunit. Awesome. Thank you so much, Laura. Speaking of that, Jill, who produces for Larry Mueller, binging on Sherlock, the Benedict Cumberbatch one. Good one. She's getting ready for the next season. Premieres evidently in early January.
Oh, coming
I didn't
up know
right
that.
Soon. Yeah.
That's awesome. Something new to watch.
Let's go home and camp out and watch that. Yeah.
Love it. All right. Thank you, Laura. And let's go to Tom is next in Madison. Tom, hi.
I like to watch Justified.
Justified. Oh, yeah. I don't know Justified. What's it about?
Well, the main character is a U.S. Marshal, and he's trying to clean up a lot of corruption in eastern Kentucky.
And it's a guy from Deadwood, Timothy Oliphant. I watched a couple episodes, and he's got family connections, so it's a little dicey for him, right?
Yeah, it is. But it's there's always a new twist to it. You just think that the story is going to end, and they just throw a new twist to it.
That's a good one, Tom. That's one I would go back to, actually. I liked the first couple episodes, just never picked up on it. I'm not sure why. Taking your binge-watching suggestions now at 800-642-1234. A lot of our colleagues here are watching this show, The Crown, and this is a Queen Elizabeth II, kind of a bio series, I guess. I haven't watched that. I thought it was one my wife was watching. She's actually watching Reign, which is Queen Elizabeth the first. So
oh,
that's
wow.
like, I was only about 500 years off
There's
or so on that one.
There's a lot of different monarchy
whole lot of
things,
Elizabeth
huh?
going on, yeah.
Nice. And no one has mentioned my two favorite binge-watching shows that I'm completely obsessed with right now, the Japanese anime series Naruto, which has a million episodes.
You keep quoting that,
yeah.
And I'm like,
I want to be Naruto. That's how into the show I am. And
wow.
also, I just discovered a friend introduced me to Mozart in the Jungle. It's an Amazon Prime show, and I can't stop watching
it. And what's that one about?
That's why I'm so tired every day. It's about classical musicians in New York, and it's amazing.
All right, Mozart in the Jungle, and what's the anime one?
Naruto. N-A-R-U-T-O. Watch it.
Back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Linda in Shell Lake. Linda, hi.
Hi. I have to second the Naruto one. That's a good one.
Yay!
Hey.
Watch that. We just finished watching the newer Doctor Who as well, and my boys really enjoyed that one. And for myself, it's Supernatural.
Oh, my kids did a lot of Supernatural. Yeah, I was in and out with it. Yeah, it looked good. I just didn't. I can't commit. I can't commit to these shows anymore. Have you watched a lot of the older Doctor Who, Linda?
No, I never watched any of the older Doctor Who.
I pretty much invented binge watching, actually, with Doctor Who, I think, for a couple years there as a teenager. Except I had to find it on the air. It wasn't on. There weren't DVDs or streaming.
Mm-mm.
No, I'd have to turn the antenna.
Fool with the rabbit ears.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Yeah, I've been there. Linda, thanks a lot for that. Appreciate the call. And Rob, pop quiz. There's a character in Supernatural mm-hmm. who is also a character on Gilmore Girls. Who is it? Oh, no, I'm not going to know his name. I'm going to have Linda
call
back.
The same actor, I'm assuming.
The same actor.
Because
that
would be weird.
Anyway, the character who plays Dean on Gilmore Girls also plays one of the leads on Supernatural.
Oh, okay.
There, I've shed almost
good.
No light on that.
Okay.
Linda, thank you. Let's go to Curtis in Appleton. Curtis, hi.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Hi. I actually have a kind of a different one. If you guys probably aren't into anime.
Well, you'd like some,
mm-hmm.
Rickards. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you guys ever Death Note?
My son is in love with that series. He read all the
Death
books.
Note?
Yeah, is it also a TV series?
Yeah. It's on Netflix. I actually am not a big anime fan, but somebody, I kind of, a little bit, like, I Dragon Ball Z, that kind of stuff as I was growing up. I kind of know it, and somebody at work had mentioned it, and I couldn't stop watching it. I would want to get off work early so I could get home to see it. It's really, really compelling. The characters are just really good.
I know exactly how you feel. But so Death Note, I'm going to add that to the list. And yeah, the books are apparently amazing too.
Yeah, okay, that Death Note, interesting. The only anime I ever binge-watched was, I think it's anime, Cowboy Bebop. And that is the most amazing theme song and opening credit sequence ever. I actually, every episode, watched through it. And sometimes when I was done, I'd go back and watch the opening credits again. We'll go next to Laura in Green Bay. Laura, hi.
Hi. I would like to highly recommend Luke Cage on Netflix, although I haven't got to watch the entire series yet, but I considered for just a brief moment calling into work to finish it after about three episodes late one night. It has great music, great villains. The protagonist, Luke Cage, is just a super in-depth, interesting character, and I believe he's a comic book character from like the 70s, and it's just it's really good, entertaining.
And does that cross over with that Jessica Jones one that's kind of in
the
same...
Yes, it does. We haven't watched that.
Which I haven't watched either. Yeah.
See, we're so behind.
Comic book, so he has introduced me to this and can commentate the entire episode. So,
Laura, can kids watch Luke Cage, or is it too grown-up?
I would not recommend.
No?
I wouldn't let my children watch it, no.
Got some stuff to wait for. Maybe that's good.
Post-bedtime watching, maybe, yeah. Time for one more. Carrie in Whitewater. Carrie, hi.
Hi. I love Transparent. It's on Amazon.
Right, and that's the guy from Arrested Development and many other things. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. The guy. But anyway, what do you like about Transparent?
Oh, it's just, it's got several storylines. It's really, Jeffrey Tambor, that's who
Thank
you're talking
you.
About,
yep.
Jeffrey Tambor. He's amazing. He's, I mean, that's worth it alone, his performance.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you for all of your suggestions. You can keep sharing your binge-watching hits, and maybe misses, too. I guess if it's a miss, you didn't binge-watch it. You just stopped. You can head over to the Central Time Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Are you inspired?
I'm really inspired, but that's a problem because I have shows that still have, 40, 50 episodes left to go. So, yeah. But winters are long in Wisconsin, so that's the blessing and the curse.
Winter is coming. We've got Veronica Mars on DVD, and the kids, I think, are old enough for that now.
Oh,
that might
like
be
another good one.
Might be our binge watch hit coming up.
Jim Delegati died today. He was 98 years old, and other than human compassion, why should you care? Well, because Delegati invented what's possibly the most iconic burger of all time, the Big Mac, the special formula of which I still remember in song form today. Hit it, Rob.
I don't remember the melody. We were talking about this earlier, but it's the two all-beef patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickle, onions on a sesame seed bun. And
very
I remember
good.
People saying it. You remember a melody. I don't know.
I remember a melody, which I will not sing, but I do
You're
remember the melody. And I guess that marketing campaign must have been pretty effective, but that has stuck around. And Delegati himself never saw a penny for his invention, but his son did say he ate one Big Mac a week for years and years.
I understand he was a franchise owner of some McDonald's restaurants. So I guess by selling more burgers, he probably did okay. You know who's not eating Big Macs, though, according to research? The millennials. You young folks, supposedly fewer than 1 in 5 millennials have tried a Big Mac.
Yeah, we did a little testing of this, and we discovered that, no, it seems like they haven't done maybe more. Maybe they tried it. They don't remember.
Maybe
but
once.
It's definitely not a thing for at least the millennials here at WPR.
Millennials prefer nuggets. You heard it here first on Central Time on the Ideas Network.